Before we begin, just a quick note. If this conversation about alcohol, identity, and desire resonates, my new book, What Are You Thirsty For? Rethinking Alcohol and the Life You Want, is out now. And if you want to go deeper, slowly, thoughtfully, and in ways that genuinely nourish you, I've opened the Thirsty For More Mindset Lab on Substack. You'll find links to both in the show notes. Right. Let's get on with the episode. Welcome to the Big Drink Rethink, the podcast for anyone questioning their relationship with alcohol or simply wondering what more life might hold. I'm Anna Donaghy, alcohol mindset coach, author, and former strategist. And each episode is going to blend lived experience, psychological insight, and powerful tools to help you understand your habits and gently rethink your drinking in a way that throws open oodles of possibilities. So whether you're trying to quit, cut down, or you're just plain curious, then you are in the right place. Let's rethink things together and explore what you're really thirsty for. Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Big Drink Rethink and another Tiny Clarity Moments episode, a conversation that takes on a little bit more of a coaching slant with some reflections that sit alongside the longer conversations on the show. Reflections that you can ponder as you go about your day, buttering your toast or walking the dog or driving the car. All right. And today's episode comes directly from the conversation I recently had with Rye Gavin. We were talking about alcohol as being the social backdrop to life, how it sits quietly behind so many occasions that we barely notice it anymore. It's just there. But one moment from that conversation really stayed with me, and kind of light bulb moment, really, because it exposed something really very strange about the way many of us think about alcohol. And it's this: we often prioritize not disrupting social life, even while alcohol is disrupting all sorts of other things. So if you think about the internal negotiation that many people have when they consider taking a break from drinking, they might think, I'd quite like to stop for a while. I'm not loving how I feel. I'm sleeping badly. My energy's off. I'm not very patient with the kids. I'm tired of losing Saturdays to hangovers. I'm just tired of feeling crap. But then another thought arrives almost immediately. Yeah, but what'll happen socially? What will people say? That's the big one, and we'll come back to that. Will it make things awkward? Will I stand out? Will I disrupt the group? And very often that thought wins. Not because the other issues aren't real, but because we are incredibly sensitive to rocking the boat socially. Humans are wired to preserve harmony inside a group. We like shared rituals. We like shared behaviors. We like shared rhythms, and alcohol provides exactly that. The rounds, the toasts, the cheers, you know, it's synchronized behavior, and synchronicity creates bonding. So when someone considers slightly stepping outside of that rhythm, even quietly, it can feel like they're disrupting something really important. But here's the tiny clarity that stuck with me after that conversation with Ryan. The disruption we're trying so hard to avoid is often the smallest disruption of all. Think about what the feared disruption actually looks like. You go to dinner, okay, and someone offers you wine and you say, no thanks, I'm not drinking tonight. Now, yes, there might be a brief pause, maybe a question. What, really? Why? But then the conversation moves on. The evening continues. And I talked about this with Rye. We assume others will judge us, feel threatened and think we're boring and think we have a problem. But in reality, most people are far more preoccupied with themselves. The discomfort is fleeting. And the story we tell ourselves is much larger than the true reaction. The social world recalibrates, which is exactly what Rye was saying when describing his own experiences. He expected a huge shift socially when he stopped drinking. But in reality, very little changed. His friends adjusted quickly and life carried on. Now compare that with the disruptions we often tolerate without question. Poor sleep, low energy, foggy mornings, shorter patience, lost weekends, tensions in relationships, moments we're physically present but mentally not quite there. Sometimes years of these things quietly accumulate, but we rarely frame them as disruption. We treat them as normal, just part of life, and that's the strange inversion. We worry intensely about disrupting one evening in the pub, whilst quietly accepting disruptions to our health, our mood, our relationships, our time, and our presence. And if you zoom out even further, the ripple effect becomes even clearer. Alcohol doesn't just disrupt individuals, it disrupts families, children growing up around unpredictability, partners living around tension or absence, communities dealing with violence linked to heavy drinking, health systems stretched by alcohol-related harm. These are enormous disruptions, and yet culturally, we rarely frame alcohol as the disruptor. It's an extraordinary example of how powerful social norms can be. Because what we're really protecting isn't alcohol, it's the social script. The smoothness of the ritual, the comfort of everyone doing exactly the same thing. But what Rye's story highlights and what I see again and again and again is that the fear disruption is really very brief, a few seconds, a question or two, and then, as I say, people adjust. Human beings, at the end of the day, are ultimately very self-centered and very adaptable. So the tiny clarity moment today is we often prioritize not disrupting the social moment, even when alcohol may already be disrupting something much, much bigger in our lives. The disruption we fear is usually small, short-lived, almost forgettable, whereas the disruptions we tolerate can sometimes be long-term, cumulative, and far more consequential. So if this is something you've been quietly considering, maybe the question to ask isn't, what if I disrupt the evening? Maybe the question is, what disruptions in my life am I already accepting to my own detriment? And if you experiment with stepping slightly outside the script, you might discover something really surprising. The boat doesn't rock nearly as much as you thought. So let's move from reflection, though, into something practical. Because if you're listening to this and thinking, fine, great, fine, I can see the logic, but it will still be awkward. That is fair. And there can be a moment. But here's something really important to remember. The awkwardness people fear is rarely about the drink itself. As I said, it's about breaking the social script. When everyone's ordering drinks and rounds and topping each other up, declining can feel like stepping slightly outside of that rhythm, but it will adjust. And here are a few very simple ways to handle that moment without turning it into a big conversation. The first is this: have a plan. Anticipate the conversation and have your messages, your side of the conversation, all thought through. It's obvious, but having a clear sense of what you're going to say makes it much more likely that you'll say what you want. So keep it light and neutral. You could simply say, nah, I'm good with this tonight, thanks. Or I'm taking a break for a bit. Or I've got an early morning. Or I'm driving, if that's true. Short, calm, delivered as though it's completely normal, because it is. The less you present it as a dramatic announcement, the less dramatic it becomes. You don't owe anyone a thesis on your drinking habits. You actually don't even owe them an explanation. But I do get that you might get asked. So if they do push you, and if they do say, why not, keep it really personal and within the realms of feelings, because people can't argue with how you feel. They can debate your principles. They can attack you on your beliefs. They can rubbish your ideas, but they can't argue with how you feel. So I would have used phrases like, no, I'm good tonight, thanks. I'm not feeling 100%. And I know drinking isn't going to help. Or, do you know what? I'm taking a wee break because I am absolutely knackered at the moment. And I'm pretty sure it's not helping. Or even a very confident, I'm not drinking at the moment. And do you know what? I feel absolutely great. Unarguable. And then change the subject. Anyway, how's that son of yours? Let's get something to drink and you can tell me about how he's getting on. And people love to talk about themselves and their families. So the fact that yours will be an alcohol-free drink ceases to be the focus. And another simple tactic is then keep that drink in hand. I know it sounds almost absurdly simple, but keep the drink in your hand. A glass of something, alcohol-free beer or whatever it is you've opted for, removes the moment entirely. Most social interactions around alcohol are actually quite visual. So if people see you holding a drink, the question often never arises 2, 3, 4 times in an evening. And then there's another mindset shift that can be really helpful too. Instead of thinking, I'm disrupting the group, try thinking, I'm just doing something slightly different tonight. Because that's actually all it is. We tend to narrate these moments as far bigger than they are. Oh, and another piece of reassurance that often gets overlooked. Even if your immediate social circle is still drinkers, the wider culture is changing very quickly. For decades, our relationship with alcohol has been something of a blind love affair. We rarely questioned it. It was simply woven into life. Celebrations, networking, parenting stress, weekends. If you didn't drink, people assumed there must be a reason. And by reason, they usually meant a problem. But something is shifting. More people are stepping back and looking at alcohol more clearly. Yay! Not necessarily because they have to, but because they want to. You can see that shift everywhere. The rise of sober curious movements, Dry January, Sober October. Conversations about drinking less are becoming completely mainstream. Public figures and influencers are openly choosing alcohol-free lifestyles. Mental health awareness is shining a light on the way that alcohol affects mood and anxiety. And of course, the explosion of alcohol-free alternatives is clear to see. Walk into any supermarket now and you'll see entire shelves dedicated to alcohol-free beers and spirits. So, you know, the cultural shift is happening, the tide is turning, and all of this means something really important. Choosing not to drink no longer marks you out as strange. Increasingly, it marks you out as intentional, aware, someone who has a mind of their own, someone who has thought about what they want. And the more people who make that choice, even quietly, the more normal it becomes. And this is how cultural shifts happen. Not through the grand declarations, but through lots of small individual decisions. And there's one final piece that can help. You don't need to convince anyone else. You don't need to analyze their drinking. You don't need to make speeches about alcohol. Simply standing comfortably in your own choice is enough. Because confidence, quiet confidence, tends to neutralize most social tension. People take their cue from you. If you seem uncomfortable about not drinking, they may become curious. If you seem relaxed about it, then they will likely relax too. So let's come back to the clarity that started this reflection. we often prioritize not rocking the social boat. Even while alcohol may be already disrupting sleep, mood, relationships, and energy. But the disruption of declining a drink? Fleeting. A moment. A question, maybe. And then the evening continues. Whereas the disruption that alcohol can cause in our lives stretches across years and years and years. And once you see that contrast clearly, the social fear does begin to shrink. Because the boat you were so worried about rocking was never nearly as fragile as you thought. And perhaps the final tiny clarity for today. When you choose not to drink, you're not stepping outside society. You're stepping inside a growing cultural shift. One where society is actually headed. One where alcohol is no longer the unquestioned default. One where people are simply asking with radical candor and self-belief, do I actually want this? And every time someone asks that question, even quietly, it creates a little more space for others to do the same. All right, so lots to think about, and I'll leave you to it, and then I'll be back next week with another episode of The Big Drink Rethink. Thank you for listening and getting curious. Please rate, review, and follow this podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you're choosing to listen. It really helps other people find the show. And don't forget to tune in to the next episode. And you can find all of my resources and become part of The Big Drink Rethink by heading to my website, thebigdrinkrethink.com.